All right, welcome. This is the first listening party ever.
Who's all here today with us?
I don't know. Why don't you tell us, Dean?
All right. It's Dean, folks. Hello. We also have Steph. We have Chance. And we have new to the CFRC universe, Frankie. Hello. Listening Party is this new show that we're trying out where we basically, it's like a book club but for albums. So we all go and we listen to a singular album and then we come back and we talk about it. What we liked, what we didn't like, and, you know, we glean vast wisdoms and knowledge.
To start us off, I picked Dan Mangan's Nice, Nice, Very Nice. The reason I picked this, primarily for nostalgia purposes, it's 10th anniversary, and that means that I listened to this way too much in high school when I thought I was cooler than everybody.
I have albums like that, too, and it honestly brought me back when you picked this one. Even listening to like the very intro, I was like, oh yeah, 2009, I forgot about this. I almost felt alone when you picked this track because I was like, I've never heard of this man, ever.
You've never heard of Dan Mangan?
You've never heard of the Dan Man?
No, I never heard of the man Dan Mangan.
Come on, Mangan.
I've also never heard of him before.
Never.
Really?
I've never even been exposed to his stuff before.
That is wild.
We'll drive until the gas is gone, and then walk until our feet are torn. Crawl until we feed the soil. Film the whole thing. It's all business in the left-hand lane. Drive there and then drive back again. Escape can't be the only way to escape. So I've gotten used to coffee sweat, still getting used to road regret. Hell, I took you up on all your threats to leave. It's a shame. It's a crying shame. Them's the brakes. And ain't it? That takes you back to from where it is you came. Rob, he likes his country tint. It's never been the lens that I see through. But I guess driving for a week or two puts words in your mouth. So find Dodge and then get out of it. It's about as country as I get. So you ain't living till you're living it. Not dead till you die. But watch out for the pair. The brakes. And ain't it always the way that takes you back to from where it is you came. It's a shame. It's a crying shame. Them's the brakes. And ain't
Do you know where the title Nice, Nice, Very Nice comes from?
No.
It comes from a Kurt Vonnegut novel, actually.
Oh.
Of course you would know this.
Yeah, very deep. Cat's Cradle.
Of course he would choose a Kurt Vonnegut.
That's like the worst Kurt Vonnegut book, though.
Disagree.
I mean, the English degree is like slapping pretty hard right now.
See, this is why the book club idea was a good thing.
Like,
it's all right.
Maybe it's the worst. I haven't read enough Kurt Vonnegut to know what's the worst one. I just know that I really liked this book. But Cat's Cradle, for those who don't know, it's presciently is about the end of the world caused by like just like three or four morons. But
so kind of like us.
Yeah, exactly. In Cat's Cradle, there's a book called The Book of Bokanon, who is this like prophet figure who writes these poems called calypsos. And he just explains like this whole religion that he's invented. He like says that he's invented it, but it all turns out to be true. The phrase "nice, nice, very nice" comes from Calypso 53, in which Bokanon describes the concept of a carass. So a carass is a collection of people whose lives are all tangled together for seemingly illogical reasons. But it's just like the will of God, like they are destined to be in each other's lives, even though like they're not related or there's no real reason for it. So I can read you the calypso if you like.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Bring it up.
Oh, the sleeping drunkard up in Central Park, and the lion hunter in the jungle dark, and the Chinese dentist and a British queen all fit together in the same machine. Nice, nice, very nice. Nice, nice, very nice. Nice, nice, very nice. So many different people, all in the same device, is the poem.
That is so Vonnegut.
Yeah, it is Vonnegut as it gets.
Like, I liked it, but boy, that boy has a style that you can pick out from a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I feel like I have to apologize to Dean. Cat's Cradle is not the worst Vonnegut novel, because I was thinking of The Player Piano, which is the worst Vonnegut novel.
Yeah, thank you. I'm vindicated.
Yeah, you're right every time.
Slaughterhouse-Five, worst Vonnegut.
I mean, I don't know.
Don't at me.
Yeah. Anyways.
But, like, yeah, I don't know. I've yet to, maybe we can piece this together as we go through, but, like, connecting the idea of the carass, of, like, disparate people sort of destined to be together. I've yet to figure out how it fits into the framework of this album.
Well, I think, honestly, if you look at, actually, it comes up really early, Dean, so I'm surprised you missed this.
Ooh.
The second track, Robots.
Right.
Robots is about, you know, kind of like the working order of day-to-day life and kind of the dregs of just being different people but kind of making up one machine. At least that's what I got from it. I could be totally off, but I feel like what you're saying kind of fits that mold.
Yeah, I get, like, especially with, like, what Vonnegut was saying with the everyone in the same device. It's very, very mechanical.
I think it's a lot of that idea, but I think it's a little bit deeper because I feel like he gets a lot into the like liminal relationship of like fan and musician and like the expectations of like a static response that the fans will always adore you and like you will always produce the same kind of like musical persona. I feel like he gets into that a lot during the Tina song and then the other ones after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even just like his response of like he went through, I don't know, he might even still be going through a period where he refuses to play Robots.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Really?
Yeah, he's like sick of it.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
my folks have seen him like 3 times.
Whoa.
He played Robots once, and it's because the event was canceled due to like a thunderstorm. So like everyone was just leaving the venue, and as they left, he played Robots. Because he's like, I can get away with it this time.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like he has some real struggles with like the music that he puts out, which isn't a new thing when it comes to artists, but at the same time, like, a lot of his tracks I found really delved into the idea of like writing music and presenting it to people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a common theme pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, it's interesting too to like then put that into perspective with him starting Side Door Project and like trying
that?
To so Side Door Project is kind of almost like a booking platform, but it's where if you're interested in having a house show, you go on this website and say, like, I'm interested in being a house venue, and then artists go on if they're interested in playing a house show. So, like, Tim Baker did an entire tour just off of Side Door. And I mean, even right now, they've managed to create this very unique like Zoom concert experience. So like a lot of artists are still making money by doing these concerts just like online. So it's interesting because he's clearly like pushed into a different form of how like artists interact with fans, especially since this is like his project.
Like zooming out a little bit, like we were talking before we hit record about how Dan Mangan's sort of like the white dude singer songwriter.
That's a hot take, Dean.
Is that a hot take?
I don't know. I agree with you, but I feel like yeah. people might not. You might want to get a little bit more. Into
he hits all the check marks.
He
know?
Does. He does. Like maybe he's not trying to be that. Maybe he is. But like he does. He fits the mold.
Well, and I feel like this album did come out in 2009. So like. We say he, like, fits the mold, but, like, I would almost also argue that he kind of helped create that mold.
Right, right.
You know, I think he was part of, like, the early kind of indie genre becoming a big deal.
Yeah, but I think this album, Nice, Nice, Very Nice, is all about, like, trying to find a spot for yourself in that identity and, like, using music as persona and in interrogating the point where the persona ends and the person begins, especially when it comes to music, and how those two, like the music you listen to and the person you are, like those two things reflect each other and interact with each other. That's how I read this album.
I think a lot of it too is like the wrench of how you're experienced by other people, and like so there's the persona that you create for your music, and then how you actually are and how those meld, and then the expectation of your fans and people looking at you and listening to your music, and how close you get to those people and what they say to you when you actually meet them, and how people like tell you what their music means to them, and it changes a lot. And I think it warps a lot of people's perspective of the way that they present their music and like what music they do present. So like maybe he had a lot of people talk to him about robots and he's like, I don't want to do that anymore. Like, I don't feel like I fit that anymore. I don't feel comfortable doing that anymore. And so I think there's a lot of room to interpret his kind of wild identity crisis during the album, and he gets like into some weird places where he's like, I want to be like the married husband and we're like going to be together for 70 years, or like I'm going to leave you, or the I'm excited to see a concert and I'm 15, and like all these other like crazy musical personas that are really easy to put a label on but more difficult to understand.
Right, definitely. I feel like a lot of it kind of is a case study between art, artists, and people receiving that art. I found it came up a lot very explicitly, but the way that you guys are explaining it, it sounds like it comes up a lot more implicitly. Like it's kind of just like sprinkled throughout all the lyrics. Is there like a certain track? Because there's, if I take a look at my notes, I remember there was like at least 3 or 4 tracks in a row where he specifically talks about songwriting, how it makes him sad, how he is sad, and therefore songwriting is good. And like that's the basis of the song, and that was like 4 tracks in a row. But then now that we're talking about it, I'm like, wow, those other tracks were doing that as well.
Yeah,
just in like kind of a different light. If you guys want to go a little more into detail, because I'm pretty convinced, but for our listeners out there,
yeah, where do you want to start?
I'd really like to hear Steph talk about the first track, just because like it's such a banger, and that was the only one that I was familiar with, and it feels to me very out of place for a lot of the stuff tonally, but like lyrically very like on key for like the idea of the traveling artist and like that persona and like the sadness and ennui related to that.
I think this song, okay, my personal opinion on this, and you guys can argue with me if you like, but I think this is the best way to start his album.
Yeah,
because if you listen to it at the very very beginning, it's like that kind of steady guitar where it's just like a steady beat where it ramps up and slowly the bass kind of gets added, and it just gets you off on the right foot listening to it. So like it doesn't stand out from the rest of the album, but rather I think it kind of introduces you to it because it gets you like it's ready very, for it, you know what I mean?
Like music wise it's very emotionally heavy, and you can feel that in like the roller coaster aspect of it and the big climax by the end of it, because it does start with just the guitar and then it gets louder and louder and bigger, and you can hear it in his voice and stuff like that, which I thought was really interesting too. But then I was like, is this normally how people like end albums rather than like beginning albums, like where it's like a big climax and then you feel really good and you're like, ooh, yeah, I'm chilling now.
Yeah, but if you look then at, you know, Set the Sails, which is the last song on the album, it's like quite the opposite, right? Where it's actually quite mellow and really like calms you down and brings you down.
That's very true.
Especially following like I think Basket, the second last song on the album, although it kind of has a little bit more of an upbeat feel to it, it's still very heavy lyric-wise, like very heavy. So you're starting off with Road Regrets, which you say like, yeah, it's emotionally heavy, but it's also probably one of the like lightest feeling tracks on the album. And you're starting off with that, and then it just like brings you through the set list or the track list and gets you to the end where all of a sudden you're trying to just kind of left almost like, I don't want to say empty, but like that kind of emptiness that you get from like a sad, slow, mellow song.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting how with Road Regrets and Set the Sail? Yeah, Set the Sails. He bookends the album with two songs about traveling by car or by boat. And in both of them, he doesn't get anywhere. In Road Regrets, he drives there and then back again. Like, he's done all this like legwork, and he doesn't have anything to show for it. And I also think it... Even, like, from the very beginning, he's, like, laying the seeds of, like, music as identity. Because he's talking about driving and how his one friend is, like, listens to country songs, but he doesn't really vibe with it.
and, like many of us.
Yeah. But he says, so find Dodge and then get out of it. That's about as country as I get. So even though he doesn't like the music, just being in the headspace of like driving across the country, it sort of gets you into that like country vibe, and he's incorporating it into his persona, but specifically through a musical lens. He's not like thinking about like the land and the people. He's thinking about the kind of music that is played in this area,
right?
And how can that affect me?
Mm-hmm.
Which I really liked. He also just wrote like a song about driving. That's a great driving tune, which is hard to do.
Driving tune. Yeah,
it was a pretty good driving tune. Not gonna lie, it threw me for a loop because first impressions on the track, like on the album, because it is the first track. But first impressions, I was like, it was one of those. Oh, here we go again. Like I thought it was gonna be another like this is gonna sound so snobby, but I thought it was gonna be another. Neutral Milk Hotel ripoff band, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I feel like it maybe a little bit was just because
Dean's got
just like, but it wasn't like, it felt like more like a thoughtful homage.
It's like calling another portrait like, oh, this is a Mona Lisa ripoff painting.
But wait, I want to back myself up here because that sure. But at the same time, he does do a cover of In the Aeroplane Over the Sea.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So there's obvious influence there. To say that there isn't some kind of influence would be silly.
I'm not saying there's not a... he's definitely influenced, but I wouldn't put that in the same ballpark.
Hot take, question, poll time.
Oh, here we go.
Do you think that... So if someone sounds like a ripoff of another band, but if they say that they're influenced by that band, does that mean they're scot-free?
I feel like it always depends, right? Like, it's one of those shitty, like, there's nuance. But, like, I feel like there really is when it comes to art because, obviously, everyone's influenced by everyone else doing it. And if you're not, like, you're probably just, like, in space, like Sun Ra or something like that. Or just terrible, yeah. Or it's just absolute trash. Yeah. Especially when you're genre writing, which is what this feels like. It feels like he's not trying to be necessarily creative or super out of the box. Like, it feels like he's writing specifically for a purpose to reach certain people. And I think in doing that, you can do that really well. And it doesn't necessarily seem like you're, like, a photocopy of somebody else.
I think that brings us beautifully into, right smack dab in the middle of the track list, You Silly Git. Which I think he, like, directly addresses what you're talking about.
We were, before we started recording today, we were talking about this track. And it's a split 50-50 on whether this track is good or not, so...
Says the joys of life are lost among the living. So I guess all those souvenirs are for her health. gives me quarters for the phone. And every time I feel alone, I go broke. Yeah, I go broke. She says, if you're not here, at least make sure you miss me. So when I miss her, I make sure to let her know. It's the least that I could do. Sure, I guess I like it too, Mr. Charming. Without the charming, I can hear the eyebrows raise when I start singing. Cause the songs I sing are all about myself. You can read me like a book, not as clever as I look. I've got a sneaky kind of selfish that I keep up on the shelf with jars of double-sided comments for people who've done nothing wrong, preparing for the lights and always practicing my sha-na-nas. I will stand right next to giants and roar beside the lions, wondering how is it so easy for leaves amid the breeze to blow from hometowns all around us to hometowns where nobody lives, just cities full of people, people, making people for the masses, people we won't ever know. Says the point of this is not to date the future, so just focus on the task at hand. Try to break up with your pride and start to flirt with satisfied.
Okay, now that I've listened to it again, just more in context, I take it back. I think that's a good song.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Yeah. That's hot. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Okay, I like the rise and fall at the beginning that you kind of get. And I also love the lyrics. Like, I know you say they've, like, it's been rehashed, but I don't know. Like, it starts with, she says the joys of life are lost among the living. Like, I don't know. That's like some manic pixie dream girl stuff. Yeah. And like, I'm a sucker for it. Like, I also, hate that, like, I'm a sucker for it.
That's his vibe, though. Oh. Like, that is exactly like he's pinpoint, like, boom, this is the, I don't want to say market, but like, this is the kind of person that I'm trying to target.
It's the chattel.
I had that in my note about 500 times. I'm like, this is 500 Days of Summer, but an
Silver Linings Playbook or.
Yeah. Wait, when did 500 Days of Summer come out? Was it around the same time?
2008, 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very Deschanel in a polka dot
Queens
dress.
Are waiting. We can talk about that.
Yeah. Wow. Really.
Dean needs to tell us what.
Yeah. My connection to what Chance was saying earlier about how you said he was derivative. Maybe not derivative, but echoing previous artists. In this song, like, he explicitly says, like, yes, that is what I'm doing. I'm not trying to be different.
He talks about how, like, right after he says,
he can hear the eyebrows raise when he starts singing, because the songs that he sings are all about himself. So he's, like, very conscious and aware of what he's singing. He's not, like, yeah, he's, like, putting this music out there, but he's, like, as, like, the whole album talks about, he's always thinking about what he's saying. And in this way, like you said, like, this is an album about songwriting. But the lyric that really stood out to me was, I will stand right next to giants. So he's not standing on the shoulders of giants. He's not building on what has already been built. He's standing beside them. He's like, I'm comfortable right here at the ground floor. I'm not trying to innovate. I'm not trying to do anything different. I'm just trying to just match what has been done.
I just had, like, a hard time with that idea, I think specifically in this song, because he does, like, talk about that a lot, about his persona as an artist and, like, traveling and how that affects his relationships with his fans and, like, significant others. But it was really difficult for me to take this song seriously, as I feel like he meant it, or like the very deep irony of him like saying like this is his persona standing next to giants and creating like another musical front for his stuff. And I feel like it reached a little bit, because a lot of the other songs are really like deeply ironically funny, where he's like making fun of the way people see him or the way that he sees other musicians. And it was just a little bit harder for him to be like, haha, yeah, I'm just like, I'm standing by giants, really like Aeroplane, like all this other stuff, when he'd already talked about it in much more impactful, like meaningful ways already or later in the album.
Yeah, it's a hard line to toe, right? Because like the idea of the singer-songwriter is like the brand that you're selling, because like, you know, music is a business. You're selling a brand, but that brand is just yourself. And I think that's the heart, and like we can talk about this when we talk about Sold maybe. But like that's the heart of the struggle that he's dealing with, is that he's trying to present himself in a way that is A, truthful and honest to who he is, and B, marketable. And that's a difficult line to toe, especially because the singer-songwriter is supposed to be very sincere, right? You're supposed to be open about who you are and what you're thinking and feeling. Like, that's the whole idea. And he does that, but like he's always towing these ironic lines. And like with Sold, and with, you could argue, even Robots, he's like, he's being overly sincere to the point where you're like, okay, I get the joke. Or like he's being very ironic to the point where he's showing a bit of himself, if right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Would then it be like, what if I have an issue with how he does it then? Right? Because that's what I got from this album. I got exactly what you're saying. Like, a whole lot of, this is the sincere me, and this is the stage me, and, like, they blend, but they don't, and these are separate things. And it came away disingenuous.
I think that comes up a lot, too, with Some People. And You Silly Git and Some People were the two songs that I would have cut from the album and didn't think that they were, like, sonically. Or yeah, because it comes off as, like, I spent a lot of time, like, watching people doing podcasts and, like, entertainers. And, like, Some People, like, felt a lot to me, like, the people who are doing podcasts and, like, replying, like, ironically to their fans about all the things that they do wrong. And they're like, some people would say, why I didn't do this. And they explain, like, sanctimoniously why they made those decisions. And it just, like, I felt like the saltiness didn't have a real good place in the album because he didn't build it up that way.
And it's too easy to be awful to the one. You need them all. So in the end, all I hope is that they know. That's the bottom from the top, and they will tell you that it's lonely too. So find a gun and spin the wheel and try to figure out which guide you'll choose. It's too easy to be angry. Don't ask questions, don't ask directions, just go. Your wife, just don't forget to shut the blinds. If you can keep your neighbors in the dark, then surely God can close her eyes. 'Cause it's too easy to be righteous when you eat. What you've been fed. Some people don't question what they've read. Some people should. Some people some people. So what do you do?
I agree with you that some people feels out of place.
Yeah, especially sonically. Holy hell. Like, my note in there was just like, Jesus, the sound changed, like, in parentheses, like, while I was going through my notes in between. I'm not going to say it because I can't talk in French. Stephanie should say it.
Et les mots croisés?
Yeah.
There we go.
Nice. There we go.
What does that mean?
I actually don't know.
I think it means crosswords.
Yeah.
Crossword puzzle.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
Right. That song had that weird slide guitar solo in it.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, my God. I laughed so hard.
Yeah. And it got to that, and I was like, this is a bop, but the rest of the song is not there. And, like, that's okay. And that's where I honestly found myself struggling a lot through this album, and not because the album's bad, but it put me on a fence the whole time, and I didn't know where I was. I was like, am I all for this because this person's being super self-aware, knows exactly what they're doing, you know. The irony is there, the care and the inward reflection is there. Am I there for that? Or what about the aspect where it is this, like, marketable product that doesn't seem to be as plastic as he's talking about marketable products are? Like, it's like he sees him, it almost comes across as he sees himself as different from the things that he's criticizing because he is self-aware. And, like, it put me on that same fence where I'm like, do I like this because he knows what he's doing? Or do I dislike this because he isn't going into it further?
Especially,
it's sort of like the brands on Twitter who, like, will, like, post ironic, like, oh, I'm in a bad head, like Wendy's, I'm in a bad headspace right now, like, don't know what I'm going to do.
Right.
And,
right.
Like, they're trying to be, like, so genuine. Like, as like, a fundamentally disingenuous thing, as a brand.
Exactly. And
that's off-putting and weird.
Yeah, and that's where, like, kind of the cleverness can come in, because you laugh at it not because of what they said, but you're literally laughing at it.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, look at these, it's out of touch.
Yeah, especially, I think if Dean can find it, maybe we can talk about it, but there's a lyric about a man beating his wife in some people.
Yes, there is.
Which was a weird, like, blind corner
so
for me.
So the lyric is,
yeah.
So paint your pickets white and beat your wife. Just don't forget to shut the blinds. If you can keep your neighbors in the dark, then surely God can close her eyes.
See, that sounds like a Rage Against the Machine line.
Yeah. And that was
killing
just like,
in the name of, like, you know what I mean?
I just, like, didn't like the implication that was, like, his behind door persona, or that he hated those behind door personas, because we were getting, like, real mixed with the way that he's talking about all the different layers of, like, musical, like, relationships and all that stuff. And I'm like, ooh, this is, makes me a little uncomfortable.
And when you look at this song, like, it seems like they, like, he's saying, like, the only thing that matters is how things appear. Like, it's only the persona, like, any actual reality of what is happening behind closed doors, what's happening in someone's head, doesn't actually matter.
Right. Right. Yeah, we live in a world of perceptions, as all the first-year philosophy students would say.
Yeah, so I've been told.
But, I think the lyrics being, like, you bringing up the lyrics, Frankie, brings me back to the thought I had when I first lambasted this album, even though I don't even dislike it. I'm just like I said, I'm on the fence. But the lyrics themselves,
the white picket fence.
On the white picket fence with the window closed. I feel like the lyrics have there's two parts of his lyrics. Like, if you want, I can simplify his lyrics in two parts. Let's say that. I don't think he's going for that, but we could say that. And one part of it is metaphor, really vague, talking about things going on, but, like, using a lot of, like, you know, synonyms and metaphors to kind of get an emotion across without talking about something specifically. And then the other side of it is talking very specifically about something, very bluntly. And I feel like the blunt part kind of comes across disingenuous sometimes because it feels like it's kind of just thrown in there. Like the one track, Basket. Basket's, okay, I really like this track.
I love that track. It is like hands down one of like the top two tracks on the album.
But I wouldn't mind if you put it on for the audience only because of the part where he talks about building a puzzle. That's verse. Good.
We are young, we have years ahead, maybe we might fall in love, fall apart, fall apart. Before it ends, well, we should try to start. So I'll go, but I'm telling you I don't wanna go. Could be stuck here and happy. So there's a puzzle I work on endlessly, and I've got the sides and all the corners, but there's a space. Yeah, there's a space. Lost some pieces I can't replace. So I'll be, but I'm telling you I don't wanna be just a wasted puzzle piece. We are old and our son took the dog away, and fair enough, guess we're tired all the time, all the time. And you know dogs, they need ample time outside. So I'll stay, but I'm telling you I don't wanna stay. So I'll brace myself against the wall and hope to God that I don't fall. My bones are worn, my hip won't hold. I used to be so young, how did I get so old? Won't you take my cane and hold my hand? You're holding on to all I have, just a basket full of memories. And I'm losing more each day, it seems. But if I can make it to the street, I'll steal a car or a bike, whatever there is to steal. And it might get cold, I just don't care. I'm going till I'm getting there. I'll ride my steed all through this town till your peaceful memory. Won't you return to me? Won't you return to me?
Okay, do you guys want to hear my favorite part of this song?
Yeah. I do.
Okay, so my favorite part of this song is, and maybe you guys can shed light onto like why I think that it's a great line, because I honestly don't know. I just really like it. But we are old and our son took the dog away, and fair enough, guess we're tired all the time, and you know dogs, they need ample time outside. I think that's just like so meaningless. And I love it.
I literally,
like, what song What song has a line about dogs needing ample time outside?
In my notes, I have that it feels like you're just looking for, like, the recipe blog for, like, a stew, and instead you found, like, the author's recipe for, like, describing how they make their favorite organic raw dog food, mm-hmm. and, like, how you can also eat it, and that's how you know it's good.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. It seems like it's, like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, like, it is funny, because it's like, where?
Yeah. yeah, and, like, it also comes right after, like, how he doesn't want to be just a wasted puzzle piece. And then right before it goes into, like, the really, like, long, rambly part of the song. I say rambly. That makes it sound bad. But, like, I don't know how it's
like the long line
it trips
versions.
Over itself. Yeah. yeah. The lyrics do, yeah.
And, like, the latter part is much more intricate. And I feel like the lyrics are a little bit more poetic in that second part. Whereas, like, you've just got this, like, part in the middle about a dog.
No, I, yeah. I really, really like that line. It, like, it seems like it's very cinematic. Like, the image is very clear of, like, oh, I can't walk the dog anymore.
Yeah.
I'm losing, like, every part of myself bit by bit to the point where, like, I can't take care of a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, grappling with that. I just love songs about getting old because it terrifies me. So whenever I see it, I'm like, yeah, man, that would suck.
It was honestly the only huge critique I had from this song was which is funny because it's the reason why you liked it. It's the use of the metaphors, like the metaphors specifically chosen. I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? It comes across very much as like, I know, when perfume commercials try to tell you that you're gonna feel like the sea and you're like, okay,
I don't know, we talked about it a little bit while we were listening to the album, like before we recorded, and we talked about how it reminded us so much of the Jeffrey Lewis track Back When I Was Four, which is very rolling, and like he says a lot of the same things in a lot of the same cadence, and he talks about I was four, I was three, I was 130, and like he talks about his pets and like his comics getting reissued and like having a son and getting remarried, and it's a lot of that banal like long talking that he does yeah. at the beginning of this song, but he just doesn't stop and the song goes on for like 6 minutes, and I enjoyed that better because I felt like it was, I don't want to say like braver, but more interesting. Although I did write that I really enjoyed like the vocal forwardness of this track because I felt like a lot of the time they were dipping him back a little bit and letting like the musical density kind of come through towards the end of the song that drowned out the vocal.
For
but
sure.
I loved that his vocal was much more forward.
Which
in
was
this.
Very unique in this song compared to the rest of the album. Because I feel like the rest of the album, I would say like musically, this album is not super intricate. Like if you listen really closely, the whole album is like very simple, like on the beat, guitar, strumming. You know, you don't get a lot of that, like.
And then each track will have like one weird instrument.
Oh, I love it!
Yeah.
Or the intricacy comes from like the basic foundation, and then they throw like soundscapes on top of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than the actual music being written intricately.
Well, and it relies very heavily on the vocals and the lyrics, and I think, and like I'm just gonna throw this in here, but I'm the only person at this table who doesn't have some university degree in English, and maybe that's why I think like maybe
you
that's why I'm
no,
like
no, no.
these lyrics are great. Like I
you,
love
you
the
basically
extended metaphor.
Have a master's in like the only book that's important in an English degree, so
that's
it's chill. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
touche.
Yeah, really. Come on now, don't try to throw us
but
under
no,
the
like,
bus here.
I love over the top metaphors. I don't know what it is and why I like it so much, but I just it makes like a little old, you know, nobody who knows nothing about English feel like, oh, this is deep.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I feel like you've been more into more concerts than I have like been in my entire life or ever will be. So I think it's pretty chill. I feel like your musical background is more than enough to make up for the fact that you didn't have to read Jane Austen 10,000 times.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I could never.
Like, I think what Dean was telling me in the beginning about where the title comes from kind of puts me in the pit that I was in before even further, where I'm like, why did you choose these metaphors?
But just like, if we're looking at like how deep this song is, I think the interesting part is, maybe you'll tell me I'm wrong, but for me, like this is the least ironic, most sincere track.
Oh, yeah.
100%, yeah.
It's also the only track that's not from his perspective at all. Like, there's no, like, he hasn't lived this experience whatsoever because he is not an old man. So he can only be fully sincere when he's no way talking about himself.
I think it comes across as, it seems so separate, but I almost liked it better. But then I didn't like what he was saying, and it kind of threw me for a loop. Because it was one of those things where I'm sitting there, and I'm like, altogether, this track is a banger. But like once I started breaking down,
I don't know
down,
if I'd use banger, but
and then once
sad
I started,
banger.
It's a sad banger. Like I liked it, but then once I started looking at each part in detail, which I found with a lot of the album, where if I looked at the parts of it as a whole, I was like, this is good. But then as soon as I start breaking it down piece by piece, I'm like, I don't really like any of these pieces.
But like, welcome to listening party where we ruin every album.
No, and usually I'm not even that I tend to be really critical of the music that I listen to, but most of the time I like the details and not it's not necessarily the album as a whole or the song as a whole. Like for a lot of the time for me it's the small details that I really enjoy. Whereas this was the opposite. I really had to think about this album differently.
I think though like to go off that and to bring it back to what Dean was saying, like I think a lot of the album, especially when it comes from his perspective, is almost like a little tongue-in-cheek. And I think that, like, we've kind of pointed that out already, but I think it's a little even more explicit than we've addressed. I think, like, that kind of his inability to be sincere about his own life experiences is kind of like...
Oh, indie queens
so
are waiting.
Exactly, yeah. You know? Yes. And I think that's, like, the... best part about this album is that, you know, it is full of these like over the top metaphors, but he's also like he's very obviously being a little bit tongue in cheek about it because it is so like almost insincere, but almost purposely insincere. You know?
Right. Yeah. The line is blurred. And I think that's where I had a hard time. And I feel like that's the point where you're either gonna love it or you're gonna be like, okay. Because for me it's like, okay. But at the same time, I also really enjoyed some of the track. But
yeah,
then it's
no,
because
it
like
time.
I sit back and I'm like, do I like this critique of self-awareness or do I find it not self-aware in itself?
Hmm.
Does it come across as trying to be more than it is? Which I thought of like a lot through this album, and I'm not even sure where I got that from, and if it's just like something I picked up prior to this album or if it was actually something I was feeling from this album.
Like I've always really liked this album, or at least like the songs that I heard before we did this and really connected with it. And I think that's because I'm a person who's trying to appear as more than he is. And as such, I'm like, yeah, these are the tracks for me, baby. Let's go.
Dean Mangan.
What were you saying, Frankie, before...
the metaphors, moving on to another song about metaphors.
Oh, it was the one that everybody said that they didn't like that much. It was Fair Verona. And that was the only one that I had time to like really look at the lyrics for because we were bad people and in a rush, as per usual. Anyway, so I was looking at it and I was like, oh, this is obviously a Shakespearean reference to Romeo and Juliet. That's where we have our title. And I spent a lot of time looking at the lyrics, being like, where is the connection here? What are we doing? And the connection was... for me, like, very flimsy, and, like, there's the obvious, like, they're talking about the mistakes that they've made and, like, how people are left, like, oh, what is it, unenthusiastic or unconcerned with the way that they're feeling. It's all very melodramatic, but in a way that I felt was also disingenuous because I was, like, you're not really getting to, like, the root of, like, a lot of the main themes in Romeo and Juliet. You're just taking, like... the unfortunate ending and unfortunate getting together of two teenagers in a way that was for me not as impactful as it could have been, especially considering like I know that he knows that he could do it and he just didn't. Like it was lyrically not as deep as I wanted it to be, especially for that track because it was a really good riff. Like I like the sound, I like the
music
behind
it. Oh, really?
Because
I feel quite the opposite.
Yeah.
I think like lyrically wise, I like I'll listen to it and I'm like, oh, it's fine. But the musicality of it, I couldn't get into. It just didn't do anything for me.
You know what? The first thing I wrote down when I heard it was it reminded me of early Modest Mouse a more melodic early Modest Mouse if Isaac Brock took it easy on his voice and sung an octave lower. is what I got from
and like
track.
The distorted melodica in it, I was like, hell yeah, this is a banger. We love the melodica in this house.
Hey, we should maybe listen to it for a sec.
Take shape of people we used to know till we grow less fond of knowing. And we can ride
the night and discard all the facts. On our backs, remembering the thoughts that we thought since we got over our parents. And if we go where we go and don't tell anyone where we're from, we can cut and paste the stars to our hearts and understand their language. And we won't spit with our mouths or draw lines in the dirt with our heels, and every single day we'll just wait and hope to see the next one. If we go down too easy, my dear, we'll still be the heart of envy of all our friends and peers. So I get home to my home, and thoughts are in my head, and my bed is full of things I left when I left earlier. And the light through the blinds and through the window pane in the lane where the fire is getting cold, for they have burned all of their belongings. And up the stairs, there's a pair who like to be made sure that they were everything they are, for they are sadly mistaken. Now I forget how we met, for those days have all passed. Now the cast is filing to the stage in a rage and taking their places. We go down too easy, my dear, we'll still be the heart of envy of all our peers and friends, my dear, to them. Forgotten where our hearts have been, till we've forgotten where our hearts have been, till we forget just where our hearts have been.